In 2,628, or 2,628 years ago, it was 605 BC. A Babylonian king by the name of Nebuchadnezzar led his army down to Jerusalem 500 miles. He laid siege to Jerusalem, and he took a wave of Jews from Judah all the way back northeast to Babylon. Among those Jews whom King Nebuchadnezzar and his army took back to Babylon was a boy named Daniel, who was about 15 years old at the time, 605 BC. He and his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, whose names were changed to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were brought along with some other Jews in that first wave in 605. Now, years down the line in 586, the temple would be completely destroyed, but Daniel and his friends were taken in that first wave 2,628 years ago. Now, Daniel was trained along with his friends in the language and literature of Babylon. And he and his friends entered the service of the king. Now, Daniel is so distinct, he excelled so much, that, get this, a foreign king made Daniel, or placed Daniel, over the province of Babylon. When Nebuchadnezzar's son, Belshazzar, started reigning around the year 539 AD or so. Well, that's actually when he was assassinated. But before he was assassinated, Daniel interpreted a dream for King Nebuchadnezzar's son Belshazzar and basically said, "You're not being very humble, you're prideful, and God is going to take you out and someone else will take your spot." And because Daniel interpreted that dream accurately, Belshazzar made Daniel the third highest in the kingdom. Do you see this kind of recurring cycle with Daniel? There's something about Daniel in the reigns of different kings, whether it be Nebuchadnezzar, whether it be Belshazzar, there's something that makes Daniel distinct and stand out. Now, mind us, he's living in a foreign land among foreign people, but he has not forgotten the God that he served. The God that he served is not left behind in Jerusalem. The God that Daniel serves came with him to Babylon. And in the midst of this foreign country that serves foreign gods, Daniel still finds the power and ability to serve his God, and people notice him. And so all of that is background until we get up to the end of chapter 5 and the beginning of chapter 6. And by the time we get there, Daniel, remember, he was 15 when he came to Babylon or so. Now it's 539 or so in the section that we're covering today, and Daniel is almost 80 years old. I don't know if you've heard the story of Daniel in the lion's den, but perhaps it might come as news to us that this is not just a young man anymore. This guy is almost 81 years old, and a new king by the name of Darius the Mede, or one that was appointed by Cyrus the Persian, comes to power. He's not a Babylonian, he's a Mede. He's from the Iranian area. It's where Mede and Persia are. That gets us up to where we are today, and I want to read, picking up at the end of chapter 5, verse 29. Then at Belshazzar, remember Belshazzar is the son, one of the sons of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel has just interpreted that his reign is about to come to an end, and Belshazzar rewards him. Verse 29, chapter 5. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple, a gold chain was placed around his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. Chapter 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom. Now, a satrap, the word just means a protector of the kingdom. These were people that made sure that taxes were being paid. They had charge over the military to quell any dissent. And so Darius appoints these satraps. Now, who do you think he's going to appoint as administrator over these satraps? Once again, under a different king, Daniel excels. And so Daniel is one of three administrators placed over the satraps, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Do you see something special about Daniel? He's very consistent. Whether he's 15, whether he's 60, whether he's 80, there's something distinct about this guy. There's something that sets him apart in his character. He's to be trusted. And because he was so distinguished among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities, the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. You know how politicians today, when two people are applying or seeking office, what do? They seek to dig up some dirt, don't they? And Prosewitz, or however you say her name, she's got a commercial now about how it's hard to say her name, but it doesn't matter because she's not an extremist like the other guy. And the other guy is not an extremist like the other person. And if there's dirt to be dug and found out, it will be discovered. Everything will come out and it will be used. This is what these administrators and satraps are trying to do with Daniel. They don't like that Daniel continues to excel, and they're determined to do something about it. But verse 4, at this, they tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man." Could you imagine two politicians, one digging into the other and having to admit, "We just can't find any dirt on this person"? And you know they go far back, don't they? They'll pull up tweets from when the person was 15. High school friends. But Daniel, look, we've tried. We can't find anything against this guy. Verse 5, we'll never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. If you're making mental notes today, here's what I hope will be a helpful way to remember the passage. If you want to jot it down or just make a mental note, I want to speak to you today about the three C's. I want to speak to you from verses 1 to 5 about character. Character. I want to speak to you from verses 6 to 15 about a crisis. A crisis is a time when a difficult or important decision must be made. So I want to talk to you about a crisis. And then lastly, I want to talk to you about the conclusion from verses 16 to 28. So character. What is Daniel's work ethic? How many of you are, well, you don't have to answer that. I know a number of you are still working. Maybe some of you are retired. All of us do things on a day-to-day basis, and something informs what we do, how we live. Whether you're a student, whether you're in school, out of school, whether you're working full-time, whether you're staying at home, there is something that informs your work ethic. And so I want to talk about character. What is Daniel's work ethic, and what informs how he lives and what he does, what he says, what he thinks about, what he meditates on? What's his work ethic? What informs it? So character. Second, crisis. Again, how does Daniel respond to a matter of life and death? All of us have to undergo crises in our life. It's not singular, it's plural. We'll see Daniel today go through a crisis in which he has to make a decision that is costly. What is that crisis? How does Daniel respond to a matter of life and death? And how will you and I, how will we respond to the different crises in our lives. Lastly, the conclusion. What happens? Daniel makes a choice in a crisis. What happens? What happens? So character, crisis, and conclusion. Those are the three things that I hope to flesh out this morning as we talk about Daniel in the lion's den, sleeping with lions. You know, there's a quite familiar definition of character. I think his name is John Woolley. Does anybody remember what it is? Character is who you are when no one's watching. Well, but if that's true, well, if no one sees, then how do you know? I think that's true. But maybe we can add a little something. I think you can tell a lot about a person's character from watching what they do in public as well. But I think you can uncover hidden things in a person's character if you observe them in private. If there's some way that you can observe a person without them noticing, sometimes certain flaws or certain good things in a person's character will come out. What are some different methods? How do you get to know a person's character? Well, if you want to know about my character, ask April. Ask a roommate. Ask friends. Ask children. If you spend a lot of time with a person, you get to know a little bit more about their character. You can tell a little bit about somebody's character if you go and look at their social media posts sometimes. And sometimes you look at a certain person's post and you'll be like, well, these posts seem very different than how I understand this person to be. What's going on there? But one way you can find out about a person is to live with them. But not all of you have that luxury. I don't know if April would call it a luxury. I think I'm living in luxury, but I think she may not be. But one way you can learn about a person's character is to live with them. So I want you to think about the people that know you best. What would they say about your character? Roommates, friends, children, parents. What would they say about your character? Well, that's one way. You could spend some time with a person. Well, another way is to do it the FBI way, and it's illegal, I think, except for the FBI, under certain circumstances, and that's to tap someone's phone. I'm not advocating that. I'm just... Please don't leave and come up, and the only thing you remember from the sermon is... Do you really think wiretapping is? But that is a way that police sometimes can uncover a crime or something of that sort by listening to someone when they are not aware. And when someone has their guard down, they'll say stuff that they might not say if they know that they're being observed. Now, another way that some people find out, well, what is so-and-so doing? Where is she going? And, you know, what's going on? Well, somebody can hire, a private investigator. And that person will take pictures, they'll jot down notes, they'll follow people around, observing them privately, and they'll let you know about, hey, what's this person doing? Where are they going? What's the deal here? In 2016, there was a social experiment, and it's a true one. I watched a video some years ago, and I rewatched it yesterday. Guy wanted to see if people would take money out of a car if it was left window down, nice sports car. He put it in a rich neighborhood, and he put it in an area of town that was a little poorer. And he wanted to see if people walking by, if they saw these $100 bills on the dashboard and on the passenger seat. So when you walk by, it's hard not to notice some hundreds. And they filmed different people. Well, there's about three different people that took the money and were immediately confronted. And some of them got mad. Like, you shouldn't be doing this here. You shouldn't be filming here. Can I have the money back? Yeah, they'll give it back, throw it on the ground, go get a real job. These are people that have just got caught stealing money from a car. With no shame. Three people walk by. Three people steal. Take the money and steal it. And then there's a guy that comes. And he reaches into the car. It looks like he's taking the money. But he takes the money off of the dashboard. Takes the money off of the seat of the car and puts it in the glove box. We wind up talking to the guy that's doing the, you know, the filming. They talk to the guy, it turns out, and I believe this is true. The guy is homeless, veteran. But he goes above and beyond, doesn't he? The right thing to do is to walk by the car. The exceptional thing to do is what this veteran did. Church, Daniel didn't just do the right thing. Daniel did and lived an exceptional life. And that's why king after king sees his character, and there's something special about this guy. This guy doesn't just do his job, he does the extra stuff. He stands out. There was no mishandling of funds with this Daniel guy. There's no playing on the computer when he's supposed to be at work. Daniel's character is distinct, and I want to ask about our character. What would emerge if we were subjected to scrutiny? Remember what they tried to do to Daniel. The verse says, at this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs, but they could not. Could that be said about you and me? Daniel's life is scrutinized. His character is scrutinized. If they are filming him 24/7, if they were listening outside his window, if they put him in situations like the one in the social experiment, there is no dirt that can be dug up on Daniel. And so I want to ask all of us, what would emerge if we were subjected to the same level of scrutiny? What would our cell phone data say if our text messages were made available? If our conversations in private were made available, if the search history from the computer was made available, if the shows we consumed were made available for public consumption, what would emerge? What do the people that know you best say about your character? Is it exceptional? Would your mom say that? Would your dad say that about you? Would your friends say that about you? What do bank statements say about us and where we spend our money? What does our time log say about us and how we're using our time? What about our language? What about how we talk with our spouses? What about how we treat our sister? What about how we treat our parents? And answer this in your mind if you can. What's the worst thing that someone would be able to say about you if your life was scrutinized? I want to tell you the worst thing that could be said about Daniel. Verse 5. We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. What a man. Amen? We will never find anything against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. What if the worst thing that somebody could say about us was, and you know, more than anything else, Daniel loved and longed to please God. That's the worst thing people could say about Daniel. And here's where the text might hit us between the eyes. We miss the mark if our friends, family, coworkers, roommates, sister, if they know us as hardworking, funny, smart, kind, but see little to no evidence of a love for God and his law, we have missed the mark. Imagine a conversation between two roommates, two female roommates. They've been living together for 3 years. One is a Christian and one is a non-Christian. The non-Christian says about her roommates, "You know, we talk about cute guys all the time. I know what she likes to eat. I know she loves pizza. I know she really likes Taylor Swift and Kendrick Lamar. We've been to concerts together. We talk about biology and chemistry and papers we have to write. And I know how she loves to spend her time talking with friends and going to the mall and buying clothes, but when she went through challenges, I never saw her pray. When I went through challenges, she never prayed for me. I never saw her open her Bible. I didn't even know she was a Christian, and I lived with her for 3 years. You see what she can say about her? Oh, hardworking. I know what she likes. I know the music she likes. I know the sports team she likes, but I didn't know that she loved God and his law. That cannot be said about Daniel. What informed what Daniel did was his love for God. Why am I exceptional in what I'm doing, Daniel would say? Because I love God. And people knew it. It wasn't something that he hid. What made his character exceptional was the fact that he loved God and people knew about it. It wasn't something that he hid. And if people can say about you, you're hardworking, I know the music you like, I know the games you play, I know the people you like, I know the type of girls you like to date and all that kind of stuff, but they don't know that you're a Christian, then we are missing the mark and something is wrong. That should not be the type of character we strive for. I want to be known as hardworking and all of this, but I'm going to hide my Christianity. No, you want to be known as someone that's hardworking because you love God. So please don't miss the mark in just being like most other people. There are a lot of good atheists that are hardworking people. That are funny, smart, and kind. What's different about you and me? It's got to be that the love we have for God is on display for people to see. You know, you can kind of tell what season it is by going to the store and walking down the candy aisle, can't you? You know it's February if you got a bunch of men with flowers in their hands and heart-shaped candy. What's coming up? Valentine's Day. Flowers and candy. All right, well, I take it that some of y'all outdo me and y'all do flowers and candy for Valentine's Day and Easter. I got it. I'm taking... Noted. And you know who else is noting that? April. But I think y'all are right. There's probably flowers and stuff. But you know it's getting close to Valentine's Day. You got the heart-shaped candy and what have you. You know what time it is right now. When you go down the candy aisle, what you see? All the chocolate-covered what? Bunnies. And you know that Easter's coming. Right on it. November, turkey display. You know it's turkey season. You walk in the store, Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas is playing. You know it's Christmas time. It is not Christmas time until you hear Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas is You, playing at TJ Maxx or somewhere. That is officially the start of Christmas season. In your character, what you do, your work ethic, what informs what you do, you always want your faith to be on display so people can see it. Year round, your faith should be on display. Your and my faith needs to be on display. That's what was different. That's what informed Daniel. And so when you think about how you use time on the job, what informs your work ethic? How do you respond when people are going through challenges? Do you offer to pray for them? Do you spit out Bible to encourage them? Do people know not just that you're hardworking, not just that you're smart, but that there's something different that informs what you do? And it's not because you want to just be known as a hardworking person. It's not because you want to get ahead. It's because all of that flows out from your faith in God. And people can see that. It's time for the people of God to rise up and stop hiding the most important and life-changing thing that we have to offer people. Maybe it's time to do some repentance. Maybe it's time to evaluate our priorities. But I know that what was true for Daniel should be true for us. What marked his character came from his faith, and people could see it. I want to talk to you about the crisis from verses 6 to 15. What's the issue? You know a little bit more about a person's character when they go through a crisis. When their faith is tested, you know a little bit more about a person. And so the big issue is, well, we can get Daniel if we make it illegal to pray to God. We know that he likes to pray. And so the only way we can get him, possibly, is if we make it illegal to pray. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's starting to be closer and closer to becoming illegal. There's increasing hostility to the things of God in the world today. It's not that it's illegal yet, but try to say something about the LGBTQ agenda. Try to say something about the abortion issue. Now, you're an extremist, you're a bigot, you're homophobic, you're transphobic. There was a guy at Stanford that delivered a lecture, and people were screaming at him. He was one of the few conservatives that they wished that his daughters would be raped. This is where some sectors of our world are getting to. There's complete hostility, and it's amazing to me that people want tolerance until you speak out against their view, and then they become as intolerant as the people that they claim to be so different from. And so the issue for Daniel is, in short, it is, do I keep on doing what I've been doing now that this is illegal? Now that prayer is illegal? Do I obey God and possibly die? Or do I disobey God and live? Is that a choice that all of us face on a weekly basis? It might not be as extreme. And a person might think, phew, glad the stakes aren't that high in our context. But oh, let me tell you, they are. Every week, Satan prowls about like a roaring lion seeking to devour you. If you've forgotten about that, we better have some open eyes. Every week, Satan is prowling around like a roaring lion, seeking to devour you and I. And he'll spit out some choices for you. Here's his methods. Present an option for you to pick something over God every week. Pick comfort over God. Pick convenience over God. Pick pleasure over God. Pick bitterness over God. Pick prestige over God. Pick being known as a hard worker and hide your Christianity. There's nothing wrong with that. You're just like most other professing Christians in the world. Why let something be different about you? Why risk being made uncomfortable? Why risk being made inconvenient? Every week, you're going to face choices like that. Every week you will. The first thing that you've got to do is the first thing that Daniel did when he faced a satanic attack. What'd he do? What is the first thing that Daniel did when he faced a crisis? He heard the news. Prayer is illegal. Some people would say, well, I'm not going to pray anymore. What did Daniel do? He went right back upstairs to his window facing out to Jerusalem. Jerusalem at this point had been destroyed, but Daniel knows that God is going to restore these people. And Daniel has faith every day. Three times a day, Daniel prays. It didn't matter if it was illegal or not. Daniel is still going to pray. And when you go through the crisis in your life, one of the ways that you can cripple yourself from accessing the power of God is not to pray. You want me to tell you about a Christian that is weak, that is full of anger, that is filled with bitterness, that is not transformed? I guarantee you, their prayer life is impoverished. You want me to tell you about a Christian that is being transformed, a Christian that is being fortified, a Christian that is being strengthened, a Christian that is being bold, a Christian that is willing to be inconvenienced? I'll tell you about a person that's life is filled with prayer. And I want to ask you, I want to do a little bit of probing. How is your prayer life? How is your prayer life? Is bitterness creeping up? Is sin creeping up? Is the past continuing to come up? Are you holding on to grudges? Is there a lack of strength and power and desire in your life? Then could it be that you are not praying for the power that you need? And you're crippled because you're standing when you should be spending time on your knees. The first thing Daniel did when faced by a satanic attack was to pray. Never face a crisis or temptation with willpower alone. Christianity is not about willpower. You don't fight lions with willpower. And Daniel knows that. I'm no match for these lions. And some of the stuff in our life we're going to be no match for. But that's why we got to get down on our knees and draw strength from the sovereign God. My dad used to say, I think he'd like to claim this for himself, but it's not original to him. He'll say that if I forgot where I came from, it's original. 7 days without prayer makes 1 week. 7 days without prayer makes 1 week. Let me give you three marks of a strong prayer life coming from Daniel. Three marks of a strong prayer life from verses 10 and 11. Remember, this is the crisis section. We're talking about how to respond to a crisis. What's the first step when you go through a crisis? It's not to go out and try to tackle the crisis. It's not to face it on your own. It's to withdraw and retreat, to kneel down and to pray. Now, let me give you three marks of a strong prayer life. Three marks of a strong prayer life. First, Daniel prayed with regularity. Regularity. There's a reason that the Jews schedule 3 hours at least of their day for prayer. In the New Testament, it was at 9 a.m., 12 noon, and 3 p.m. Some texts will say morning, afternoon, and night, but the point of the matter is there is time set apart for prayer. How are you going to excel on your job? How are you going to take a stand for God? How are you going to sacrifice and serve God? You want to know how Daniel did it? That man prayed 3 times a day, every day, 24/7, 365. There wasn't a day that Daniel didn't emerge from his knees and pray. You and I need to pray with regularity. And if you haven't been praying with regularity, oh, we're missing out on so much. I want you to have some strength to face this stuff in your life. I want you to be able to be bold, to tap into the things that God will give you in no other way but through prayer. But the only way you can have it is to pray. Prayer is the key that unlocks heaven when prayer ascends, the mercy of God descends. Pray with regularity. You know how you can start praying with regularity? Make a schedule, set aside scheduled time for prayer. You need scheduled time for prayer. And take a notebook. That's what I've started doing. Get a notebook and write down prayer requests for others. It gave me great joy on Saturday to pray for some of you. And I'll tell you the truth. Sometimes I have good intentions of praying for people, but I wasn't following through. I was like, I got to pray for people. Let me write it down so I don't forget. And I'm going to pray. I set aside some time for that. Will you set aside some time for prayer? It doesn't have to be 9, 12, and 3. It could be while you're on the way to work, after you drop the kids off from school. But we need to pray. The elders in our last meeting said that we want this to continue. We want to excel at prayer. Am I right about it, Ken? I think we can all hop on board with that. There's opportunities some Tuesday nights. There's opportunities sometimes after worship for the people of God to get together and pray. But we need to be doing that. Regularity is important. Set aside some time. Here's the second mark of a strong prayer life. Here's the second mark of a strong prayer life. It's filled with gratitude. Now, a lot of people, their life are filled with a third mark of prayer. That is petition. That's beseeching God for things that we need. But an important part of prayer that might be missing from our lives is gratitude. Notice Daniel, when he found out about the crisis, It says he went upstairs where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Now, I don't know what you would be thinking about if you knew that there's a good chance you were about to be thrown to lions. But notice, Daniel, three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed. And what does he do first? What does it say? Giving what? Thanks for what? I'm about to be thrown to the lions here. But Daniel knows that there is something to be thankful for. Thanksgiving means what? That you've received something from God in prayer. How many of you can say that you've received something from God on a daily basis? If God took away our health, where would we be? If God took away our right mind, how would we reason? How would we think? If God took away our giftedness, those are things we could be thankful for. An important part of prayer is gratitude. You see, prayer is not just foundational for Daniel, it is formational. If you are filled with gratitude, it is harder to be angry. Let me give you an example of that. I'm a little OCD when it comes to cleaning. I like clean stuff, so I clean multiple times a day. Which with children is kind of hard, because you pick up toys and then you turn around and I was like, why'd I pick up these blocks? They're right back on the floor. April does most of the cooking in our family. I do all of the cleaning, most of the cleaning. Sometimes it irks me that I don't like it when utensils filled with food are just stuck on a counter to make spots. But April does that all the time. And sometimes it would lead to, like, it could escalate into, like, how did a spoon on the counter turn into this earth-shattering argument? But you know what? I started to see that I need to be grateful that I've got a wife that cooks. Food on a spoon means food in my belly. And there's so many things that I love about April. And I said, I'm just grateful. I'm just trying to be grateful for the fact that you cook. You see how being filled with gratitude can decrease anger. You got people that are holding on to bitterness, holding on to grudges, not willing to forgive people. Probably because a good diagnosis that is probably true is that their prayers are lacking gratitude. Try adding a little bit of gratitude to your prayer time and watch how it can change your mood, your perception, your perspective. Sometimes what we need from God is just a new perspective. God, give me wisdom to think about this rightly. Oftentimes we fall because we think wrongly about a situation going on in our lives. And so we can pray, God, help me to think. You are the giver of wisdom and the giver of all things. Help me to think about this rightly. That will only come out if you know that God is the one that gives to you. And if you know that God is the one that gives to you, you can start to respond to other people with grace because you have a God that continues to give you the things that you need. And if the other part of your prayer is petition and asking God for things, it means that there is a lack in our own prayer lives so that we encounter people that also have lacks. We realize that they are just like us in need of the grace and giving of God and for someone to answer their needs, and that someone might be you. If you're a person filled with gratitude and you know where all of the good things in your life come from. So the three marks of a strong prayer life, what are they? It was regularity. It's filled with gratitude. And it also includes petition. Well, we talked about Daniel's character. We know that he was exemplary because of his faith. We talked about the crisis and what we need to do when we face a crisis. So what happened? Daniel made a choice. And what happened? You might think, well, Daniel wasn't thrown into the lion's den. He prayed, God gave him help and stepped in, and he wasn't thrown into the lion's den. Is that what happens? He's thrown into the lion's den. Sometimes God will send you into situations to let you know how weak you are and how powerful he is. Now, I hope I'm not reading into the text too much, but if I was Daniel, I would have been going through a little bit of emotional anxiety. Imagine being thrown into the lion's pit at the Milwaukee Zoo. Hadn't eaten in a little bit. Now, you imagine the emotional preparation knowing that this is going to happen. Now, imagine that there's 6-7 lions. So all that to say, just because you pray and you ask God for help doesn't always mean that he's going to help you in the way that you think he should. But he will always help. Sometimes you've got to go through things that get you to the end of your power so that God's strength can be manifested. That's what God told to Paul. My grace is sufficient. My power is sufficient for you. It works in weakness. So when you find yourself in a position of weakness, remember that it's an opportunity for the power of God to be revealed. So Daniel has to suffer being thrown into the lion's den, but something happens. William Morrow said this to me from VeggieTales. He said, God sent an angel, and that angel said to the lion, shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. And then I think on VeggieTales, Daniel ordered some pizza and just did all these. So that's according to William Morrow. If you want to know what really happened, you have to go and watch VeggieTales. But notice that Daniel's right choice led him to suffer, but that God's power was displayed in the middle of the lion's den, because where Daniel was too weak to do anything to these lions, he tapped into the power of God through faith. And if you and I tap into the power of God through faith, then it doesn't matter if we go through situations in which we are weak. That's when the power of God can be displayed. And I don't want you to miss this. It's because Daniel was faithful that he was thrown into the lion's den and suffered whatever he suffered. But it's because he was faithful that God's power was displayed and the mouths of the lions were shut. Now, I want you to know that Daniel was already a believer at this time. But you know what? There's something important for every believer, and that is that God will rescue us from the strongest evil. And you've got to know that going forward. I don't care if it's death. I don't care what kind of illness it is. I don't care what kind of losses you experience. What kind of negative things impact you. You've got to know in your life as a Christian that God is not done saving. He didn't save you in the past to leave you to the present situation to dry out. I want you to know that God will rescue you from every attack against your faith if you continue to hold on to the faith that you have. And I want you to see how Daniel's love for God led to people knowing God in a whole new way. If Daniel wouldn't have done what he would have done, the outcome might have been a little bit different. So you've got to understand, sometimes the reason for suffering is not for you, it's to help someone else. I know that may sound cliche, but there are a number of people that came to God by witnessing the suffering of a faithful Christian, fortified by prayer, filled with thanksgiving. And you and I have got to be those kind of people. If you need a reason, know that sometimes you go through what you go through so that other people can watch you and see the power of God displayed in your weakness. That's what happens in the story of Daniel in the lion's den. The king issues a decree, and he says, in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. We have a God of Babylon, but there's something different about Daniel's God. And when this king formally issued a decree that almost took Daniel's life, God turned it around, and now this king is issuing a decree that everybody needs to worship the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And this is a marvelous witnessing scene due to Daniel's faith. So the conclusion of the story, there's human suffering, there's the power of God displayed, and then God is glorified because people recognize him as the God of all that is. You know, when Daniel was in the lion's den, there was a stone rolled across the tomb and it was sealed. Daniel was in there with the lions, and through the power of God, he emerged. You know the larger story that this points to. There was a man sent from God. His name was Jesus. He took on flesh. He came and he suffered. And he was not rescued in the same way that Daniel was. He actually died. He died on a cross. Not for his own sins, he had none, but for yours and for mine. He, like Daniel, was placed in a tomb and it was sealed. And he was in there with our greatest enemy, death. But that stone was rolled away on Sunday morning. Jesus Christ is alive. And that is your and that is my hope, that God used the suffering of Jesus to bring about salvation so that his name can be glorified. Does anybody need to be changed and to be transformed to put him on today? Does anybody need renewed hope this morning? Then why don't you come as we celebrate the living God who endures forever, whose kingdom will not be destroyed, whose dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel, and he will rescue us from every evil attack and bring us safely into his kingdom. Let's celebrate that God as we stand and sing.